people are making a lot of decisions with this data, and so we want to make sure it has as much integrity as possible.
A report on the expense of drug and alcohol abuse. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a Fairbanks doctor's license is suspended after allegations of illegal drug use.
There was never any evidence of any issues or any reported problems prior to January.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
The state medical board has suspended the license of the former chief of staff at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. The suspension of Dr. Christopher Jensen earlier this month is the result of accusations filed by the state, including drug use.
Allegations of potential substance abuse.
Angela Bird is chief investigator for the State Office of Professional Licensing. She references a report detailing Dr. Jensen's alleged use of cocaine, which came to light following a January 18th mental health breakdown. Information, she says, was enough to raise safety issues.
The board has the ability to summarily suspend a provider based on their public safety responsibility.
FMH Chief Medical Officer Danny Robinette says Dr. Jensen's privileges at the hospital were immediately suspended following the January breakdown, during which state troopers brought him to the hospital after finding him lightly clothed on the street at 40 below zero.
He requested at that time a leave of absence from the medical staff and subsequently submitted a resignation as chief of staff.
Robinette says Jensen, a plastic surgeon, was well-respected and had no known history of mental health issues or drug problems, nor any complaints filed against him.
He's been on staff here since, I believe, 2009, if I'm correct in that. I've actually worked with him myself personally before I was chief medical officer as a surgeon on patients together. His outcomes and results were good. There was never any evidence of any issues or any reported problems prior to January.
Robinette underscores that Jensen was not a hospital employee and therefore only subject to drug screening if there was suspicion of a problem. The medical board license suspension notice orders Jensen to get a psychiatric evaluation. The state's BERT says Jensen has requested a hearing on the suspension. Jensen did not return a call requesting comment. The total costs from alcohol and drug abuse and dependence in Alaska are more than $3 billion per year. Those numbers are according to a new Alaska Mental Health Trust report completed by the McDowell Group. And while much of the recent focus has been on the opioid crisis, the report found that alcohol use causes more economic damage. Mental Health Trust legislative liaison Jeff Jesse says there's a proven way to reduce these costs, provide treatment to everyone who could benefit from it. He says state funding for programs that provide this treatment is limited.
It's stunning to me how much effort is being put forth by this legislature in attempting to reduce the costs of government programs and departments that are at least arguably trying to contribute something positive to Alaska and Alaskans.
Jesse testified to the Health and Social Services Committees in the House and Senate over the last 2 days. He notes the costs are greater than the gap between what the state government spends and what it raises in oil revenue. The report found a third of the economic costs from alcohol misuse are due to the lost income for the families and local economy of those who die from alcohol-related causes. Other major alcohol-related costs result from the expense of the criminal justice system, health care, motor vehicle crashes, services and welfare. Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz says the information makes lawmakers more aware of the problem.
I think that the report has done exactly what it was designed to do, which is to show the hundreds of millions and really billions of dollars that we spend each year as a state by not properly grappling with the issue of alcohol and also drug abuse.
McDowell Group Anchorage Vice President Donna Logan notes this is the fourth report her organization has completed since 2001. Each report has had successively more accurate information. This has led the cost estimates from alcohol misuse to rise by 50% in the last 4 years.
I think when you have better data and better modeling, the credibility of your study improves, and people are making a lot of decisions with this data, and so we want to make sure it has as much integrity as possible.
While Alaska's costs from alcohol are large, the amount of alcohol abuse and dependence in the state was similar to national averages, according to the report. Authorities have identified the troopers involved in a fatal shooting of a suspect on Sunday outside of Wasilla. Christopher Havens, a trooper since 2012, and Jason Somerville, a trooper since 2015, both discharged their firearms in the shooting that killed Justin Smith of Wasilla early Sunday morning. Smith allegedly took troopers on a high-speed chase, which ended on the park's highway after troopers deployed spike strips. Troopers say Smith then attempted to flee, and Trooper K-9 Rico was sent after the suspect. Smith allegedly fired on and killed Rico, a 3-year-old Dutch Shepherd. Both troopers fired their weapons, fatally wounding Smith. K-9 Rico had worked with Trooper Haven since October 2016. State investigators have not released any more details on the fatal shooting. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a look at our complicated views on climate change.
But it's also too simplistic to simply say, well, there are climate believers and climate deniers. That's not accurate either.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska wants to invest in UA-educated teachers. Individuals interested in a future in teaching can apply for the UA Teach for Alaska Presidential Scholarship, a $12,000 scholarship for degree studies at any of the UA campuses. An education from the University of Alaska is an investment in your future. Application period closes April 15th. More information at drivechangeak.org. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
After a sudden resignation, Alaska's second largest school district finds itself in need of a superintendent for the second time in under a year. On Monday, the Mat-Su Borough School District announced the school board would hold an emergency special meeting with less than 4 hours' notice. The agenda for that meeting included naming an interim superintendent. A resolution justifying the meeting's emergency status cites the impending immediate resignation of current superintendent of schools, Gene Stone. After passing the resolution and more than 90 minutes of executive session, the school board reconvened its public meeting and voted unanimously to accept the resignation of Gene Stone, effective April 3rd. Stone was named as superintendent last May after the departure of Dr. Dina Bishop for the Anchorage School District. Superintendent Stone did not speak publicly at the meeting. Mat-Su School Board President Dr. Donna Dearman says Stone tendered his resignation for personal reasons. She did not elaborate and asked that the privacy of Stone and his family be respected.
Mr. Stone asked the board to accept his resignation. He was not asked by the board to resign. I want that out there, and I want to make that clear.
Dr. Monica Goyette, current Assistant Superintendent of Instruction, will take over as Interim Superintendent of Schools for the Mat-Su. Goyette has an 18-year history with the district. From public safety to platting, the Mat-Su Borough's various departments have unveiled their latest round of budget requests. Overall, the borough expects a more than $12 million shortfall between proposed spending and expected revenue. That gap represents nearly 10% of the budget. Borough Manager John Moosey says the biggest chunk of that deficit is due to the governor's veto of school bond debt reimbursement. Moosey says continued decreases in state funding are inevitable.
We are realizing that this is our new environment where we can expect very little help from the state. And we're very concerned about operating in this economy where we're shedding jobs and business opportunities.
Moosey says the borough will be able to use surplus money it has saved from years past to bridge the gap. He says the borough's tax cap means Mat-Su residents should not expect much of an increase in property taxes, which is its largest revenue source.
I'm a taxpayer. It's a great thing. For operation, it just means it's a little bit tougher. We got to be a little bit more creative and maybe not do everything we want to do. So we're trying to find new and creative ways to kind of meet those needs and prioritize on things that, yeah, this was great to have in the past. We may not be able to do this anymore or might not be able to do as much of this as we've done in the past.
The budgets now go to the Borough Assembly for discussion and revisions. Yesterday, President Donald Trump signed an executive order aimed at rolling back many of the Obama administration's efforts to curb climate change. The order comes as surveys show Americans remain divided over global warming's causes and consequences. But those divides often show up in unexpected ways. Rachel Waldholtz of Alaska's Energy Desk reports on our complicated, contradictory climate change opinions.
Anchorage resident Laura Odin is so not pleased with the president's order. She even looked up the White House telephone number to vent her frustration. Does she believe global warming is happening?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that it's caused mostly by human activity?
I mean, yes, the answer is yes. And we should stop doing this. We should stop...
Stop arguing over climate change. That's unlikely to happen anytime soon. But Anthony Leisowitz says the conversation is a lot more interesting than it's sometimes portrayed. Are Americans split on climate change? Sure.
But it's also too simplistic to simply say, well, there are climate believers and climate deniers. That's not accurate either.
Leisowitz runs the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication, and he says you can group the American public into roughly six categories. Call it your climate change personality type. For instance, Laura Odin, she's probably one of what Leisowitz calls the alarmed.
They're firmly convinced it's happening, it's human-caused, it's urgent, they strongly support policy action, they really want to know, what can I do to get involved?
And that's about 18% of Americans. On the other end of the spectrum, the dismissive.
That's 9% of the country who are firmly convinced it's not happening, it's not human-caused, it's not a serious problem, and many of whom flat-out tell us that they think it's a giant conspiracy.
And in between, there's a whole range of opinions. The concerned, the cautious, the disengaged, and the doubtful. So I headed out to find some real-life examples. And where do you go to talk to Alaskans of all stripes? The Costco parking lot in East Anchorage, of course. Take Guy Hobson. He's 69 and retired. He lives in Eagle River. And Hobson might be what Leisowitz calls cautious. They're about a quarter of the country.
Do I believe in climate change? There's definitely some temperature changes, yeah. But I don't know that there's anything we could do about it or should do about it.
He believes global warming is happening and says it's already affecting people in Alaska. But he says he has no idea whether global warming is caused by human activity. That's a pretty common take. The Yale researchers found that while 70% of Americans believe global warming is happening, only about half believe it's caused by human activity. And before any of our alarmed listeners start shouting at the radio, climate scientists overwhelmingly agree that global warming is happening, is serious, and is driven by human activity. That's not enough to sway Bill. He didn't want to give his last name. He's 20 and a student at UAA. He says he knows what scientists say, but he disagrees.
I believe the Earth was created, and weather happens how it's supposed to happen.
That might put him in the category the Yale researchers call doubtful. People who don't really think global warming is happening, but if it is, don't think humans can do anything about it. Christopher Hossein was shopping with his parents. He's 15, and he believes climate change is real. But is it going to affect him?
Probably, but not like 10 years, probably like when I'm like their age, probably I could probably see some stuff happening.
In other words, not for a while. Christopher has plenty of company in that opinion. Nationwide, most people say global warming will harm future generations, but only 40% say it will harm them personally. Interestingly, Alaskans are no more likely to say climate change will harm them, despite the fact that warming is happening here faster than anywhere else in the country. Christopher's dad, cab driver Mohammed Hussein, is less relaxed about it.
It was the last 2 years, what was the... That was not real even Alaska. There was no cold, no snow. So you can see it. It's not, you don't have to be scientist.
But whatever their opinion, if there was one thing this highly unscientific Costco poll showed, it's that Alaskans seem pretty eager to talk about climate change. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
A lot of snow fell in the Anchorage Bowl overnight. The National Weather Service says nearly 9 inches of snow fell on Alaska's largest city between 10 p.m. and 1:30 today. Meteorologist Rebecca Duell says that's a record for March 29th in Anchorage, but not an unusual snowfall. The latest snowfall on record of at least 0.1 inch was on May 22nd, 1964. The previous high snowfall for March 29th was 3.4 inches set in 2001. Today's snowfall closed schools and slowed traffic. Arctic sea ice extent hit a new record low this month for the third year in a row. That sea ice, or lack of it, drives climate patterns around the globe. But how? We put that question to Brian Brettschneider for the segment Ask a Climatologist. He says it's all about energy. Sea ice reflects most of the sun's energy back into space, while the open ocean does not.
Some studies have shown that about 10 or 15% more energy over the entire Arctic basin is being absorbed than what occurred before the big sea ice melt-off in the last 15 or 20 years. So it's like having a 60-watt light bulb, taking it out and replacing it with a 70-watt light bulb. And over time, that adds up. And so the whole Arctic basin, as it keeps on warming up, it's like turning up the temperature in the refrigerator. It's just going to melt that ice. More and more ice is going to melt. It's harder to freeze up in the winter. And with that increased solar energy, it's going to be easier to melt in the summer. So it's what's called a positive feedback cycle.
What are the local climate effects from this low winter sea ice extent in the Arctic?
So when you have open water, there's no barrier between that warmth and what we would normally expect for winter cold. So like up on the North Slope, we would expect it to be, 30, 40 below zero. But when you have 30 degree water right next to the land, that warmth then can spread inland and it can keep the temperatures dramatically warmer than what you'd ordinarily expect. So places along the North Slope, the West Coast, have been much, much warmer, particularly in the fall as freeze-up occurs later and later.
How about the global effects on weather and climate?
Well, that's a really interesting question because people on the lower latitudes, whether it's the lower 48 or South America, the tropical island, everyone is impacted by what goes on in the Arctic and the amount of sea ice. So the entire atmospheric circulation pattern is driven by temperature differences between the tropical latitudes and the Arctic latitudes. And that affects the jet stream, it affects the polar vortex, it affects where big high-pressure systems and big low-pressure systems set up.
So it's like the atmosphere is trying to balance out the energy difference?
It is. It's trying to become an equilibrium. So the tropics always receive more heat than they can deal with. The Arctic latitudes always are in a heat deficit, and the winds and the atmosphere is equaling that out. So when you change the temperature patterns, the way that the atmosphere tries to become an equilibrium changes as well. It's like pouring hot water into a cold bathtub. The temperature tries to even itself out, but if you change the temperature of the water, the way that evens out is going to be different.
Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Annie Feit from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
A system that could power remote areas of Alaska is being tested in an unexpected place. Typically found in Scandinavian countries, a new cleaner energy technology is now coming to Fairbanks. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Our PR campaign has been, this isn't wood burning, it's wood gasifying.
That's Ben Leffler, an energy management engineer at the Fairbanks North Star Borough. He's talking about an innovative system for generating both heat and power, the first of its kind in Alaska. And it's being installed at a location called the Big Dipper.
It's used for recreational skating, and it's also where the Ice Dogs hockey team plays their home games.
In December, the Alaska Energy Authority awarded a matching grant to help fund the new project. It's expected to cost upwards of $700,000, and the borough is picking up some of the cost. Leffler says this is a way to save money and an opportunity that could eventually create jobs. It works like this. Wood chips are heated up, driving a gas off the wood, and that gas goes into an internal combustion engine driving a generator.
And so it's very similar to running a generator on natural gas.
An ice rink might seem like an unlikely place to try this out. And there's another reason why you might not expect a wood gasification system in Fairbanks.
We've run into a lot of, healthy questions about emissions specifically.
According to the Environmental Protection Agency, Fairbanks' air pollution problem is serious, and it's been linked to activities like burning wood. That's another reason Leffler says the borough was interested in the investment. The gasification process separates out the harmful particles, so the system runs fairly clean. Leffler says it won't supply all of the Big Dipper's energy needs, but it could displace about a quarter of the electricity and about half of the cost to keep the building warm. And in remote Alaska, in places that run on diesel, the savings could be big.
In rural communities, if this technology is viable and they can produce a suitable fuel to run it, the payback would be on the order of a couple years.
Leffler says that pencils out to reduced energy cost of up to $200,000 a year. Of course, this is a test project, and it'll take some time before they'll know if this technology could apply to places in Alaska that need it the most. Leffler expects the system could be installed at the Big Dipper within the year. And the Ice Dogs can play their games under lights powered, in part, by wood. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
After more than a month without an operating sewer or water system, the community of St. Michael can again access those services at the local health clinic and city building. About 10 miles of above-ground water and sewer lines in St. Michael froze up in mid-January. According to an Alaska Native Health Tribal Health Consortium press release earlier this month, local water operators in St. Michael with ANTHC's support were able to thaw out those main lines. John Nichols, the director of Rural Utility Management Services for ANTHC, says the lines were thawed out at the end of February, which required a lot of running water.
The option that is usually used to thaw water and sewer lines is called jetting. So essentially you heat water and you run it through a high-pressure hose, and essentially you blast that heated water into the ice that's on the inside of a pipe, and that's used to thaw that pipe. Now, the downside of jetting is it requires a fair bit of water, so you're using about 8 gallons a minute to thaw the ice.
Nichols says in St. Michael there is a limited amount of water left in the storage tank, which can't be replenished until summer, and that played a role in the thawing process.
So that's why in St. Michael's they selected community buildings that were closest to the water plant to thaw the lines to those buildings and not thaw the entire system, because as we calculated, to thaw the entire system would have taken months and more water than the community had available. So this was a good way to get as much service as possible to the community while still conserving the water that they had.
Nichols suspects the pipes froze after the water system was damaged from shifting foundations caused by permafrost thaw and slumping. In order to repair the damaged lines and prevent further freeze-ups going forward, Nichols says the consortium is looking for funding from multiple sources.
It's going to require hundreds of thousands of dollars to thaw the system and then get that system repaired so we won't have this problem again next year. And funding sources we're looking at, we've looked at some emergency services funding. We're looking at some community development block grant funding. Also looking at Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation to see if any funding might be available there.
Residents of St. Michael are able to use showers at the city building. However, Nichols suspects full services won't be restored to the community until later this summer. Building electric circuits has been a science class staple for decades, but the lesson plan is changing as new technologies like drones and robots enter the scene. KSTK's Aaron Bolton joined Wrangell students to see how it's done.
A handful of middle and high school students are gathered in Wrangell High School's shop to build their very own drones. Plastic pieces lie all over a communal table as students screw and zip tie their machines together. Junior Zachary Seddon is just finishing his frame and is about to attach small motors to each corner.
The motors have to be screwed on, and we have to solder male and female ends to the motors and the circuitry.
But that's not all students are learning through the Alaskans Transforming Educational Access within Communities and Homes program, or AKTeach for short. The Correspondents Homeschool Program provides supplemental online courses for school districts around the state. The Kodiak-based school is trying to use these drones to help students understand the skills necessary to build them, as well as how to fly, practical applications, and legal limits. The program's director of rural schools, Phil Johnson, hopes the two-day workshop will spark interest in science and technology career paths.
We want them to recognize that there is science here, and really our goal is to tie it in. We're teaching them to kind of do the piloting component, then we want to go through the fabrication component, then we want to take them into the workflow piece where we have 3D mapping. They get into more and more and more of the science piece.
But it's not all about drones. Wrangell High students are also learning how to program robots and build paper circuitry. In another room, homeschool and correspondence coordinator Peggy Azuyak is teaching students to program small robots called dashes using apps on an iPad.
Just giving students an introduction to really basic early coding skills.
In the afternoon, students put all they've learned into one final test, building a Rube Goldberg machine. They are required to use a dash robot, light a paper circuit, and as a result, pop a balloon. At the end of the day, students tested their machines. Some groups were successful and others weren't.
If you had more supplies or different choices, what would you do differently next time? A bigger marble?
Wrangell students, like many across the country, are being engaged through these science and technology programs, all in the hopes of piquing their interests in careers of the future. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Rachel Waldholtz, Annie Fite, Josh Edge and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Aaron Bolton in Wrangell, and Davis Hovey in Nome. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
When you pick Click Give, you become a partner with a local nonprofit working to protect the things you love about Alaska. Whether it's the arts, our parks, or lending a hand to someone in crisis, with Pick Click Give, it's easy to find a nonprofit that shares your passion or provides programs in your neighborhood. When you apply for your PFD, say yes to sharing just $25 or more of your dividend. If you've already filed, add a donation at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by Pick Click Give.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.